Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Can actually achieve the best of both worlds in many circumstances. Whereas when I was buying for a home, I was buying purely with my heart and with no real consideration for the investment potential of that home.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we'll continue our discussion with property investor and buyer's agent, Giles Hill. Having bought and sold over a dozen properties, Hill shares the most important lessons he learned as a young investor, including his most exciting moments, as well as his worst. Having purchased properties in England before moving here to Australia, Hill's investment journey is a little different to most. I pick his brain about his current portfolio, learning some interesting facts about his strategies.
So I've probably had about 13 properties for myself in my own journey, and it's more about the lessons that's learned, because I don't hold many of them. I've sold them, and one of the things which would have been great would have been to hold some of these. But the reality is quite often you do really need to release the capital, because as you and your listeners will know, it comes down to serviceability, and sometimes you just need to access that capital. So there's a couple of them which would have been really nice to still own, but they were kind of all part of where it's led me to today. Also, I bought properties on a number of occasions because from a lifestyle perspective. And they didn't perform as well as investments. And obviously that wasn't the primary purpose. But had I known what I know today, I would have been much more strategic in my property acquisitions, because you can actually achieve the best of both worlds in many circumstances. Whereas when I was buying for a home, I was buying purely with my heart and with no real consideration for the investment potential of that home.
Having bought and sold so many properties, Hill has an opportunity to reflect on his moments of the past.
Yeah, when I look at what I know today, it's so much, and it all just comes through from experience. They say it's the good experiences, the bad experiences, and I just operated with no real strategy, with no real data or evidence to back what I was doing. I was just lucky sometimes, and luckier others, but there really was nothing there. And that's one of the things which is, now I could see that I could have, I don't know, I feel I'm very successful, but financially I could have potentially been more productive if I'd followed a strategy.
So what about his worst investment moments? Hill has his fair share.
That first property which we talked about, the 4-bedroom house, which I had for 13 years, there was a period there where I had a tenant in there, and he stopped paying the rent. Then he'd pay some jibs and drabs. He was having a tough time. I think it was probably self-managed, or the agency didn't do much about it, really. It was difficult. The guy had been there a long time and he'd paid his rent. I went around and I spoke to him. I tried to see if we could come to some sort of arrangement. And then finally, he moved out, one of the neighbors fortunately let me know that had happened, but he left, his house was full of stuff.
I don't understand them. They must have been going through obviously a tough time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I think that maybe they were a big family. Obviously, it was a 4-bedroom house. I think maybe he went through a separation or something. Obviously tough times had happened, but they left, the house was absolutely full of rubbish and furniture and all sorts of stuff. I remember having to hire a skip and go around there and clear it all out. So that was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I guess, you know, like when people leave those kind of things, what was this in the UK or was this in Sydney that happened, by the way?
Yeah, that was the UK. That was the first house that I bought, that one in Berkshire in England back in 1990. The one thing it's only been more recent, I really started to understand the fluctuations in the market and how, when is a good time and how when it's not a good time, and also how to really ensure that you get the best possible sale price for that asset. I just probably gave it to a local agent. I didn't spend sufficient time really to understand what its market value was or who the best agent might have been. It was just that kind of knee-jerk reaction. It might have been better to renovate it and sell it or to style it. There might have been some things that I could have done which would have further increased the return on that investment, but I was just glad to see the back of it.
Hill couldn't wait to wash his hands with that property after having learned his lesson. So, did he have any aha moments or realizations which made his life easier in his future investing career?
So, I've been in Australia for 20 years, but 9 years ago, I was back in the UK for 9 months. My wife's Swedish and we wanted to be closer to her family in Sweden, so we tried the UK. Fortunately, we were able to come back to Australia, which is great. But whilst I was there, I did a couple of I wanted to get involved in doing a property project then. That was at the time when I decided that property was my future.
After years spent working in the telecommunications industry, Hill realized that property investing was the way forward.
Post my 25 years of IT telco sales. So I got to England, we rented a house there, and I looked for a project. I just wanted to get stuck into something. I've had two babies and a wife at home. I just wanted to, I can't sit still. And it's interesting, so actually I bought a property. So I looked, and it's kind of interesting. I knew that I was better off to be closer to the center of London because the property market is just so much stronger. And every month, this company, the one I used was Savills. They were an auction house, and they create a book, and they just you go to a massive auction and they sell those properties. And I bought a property. It was a terrace house in Twickenham, which was in need of renovation. And I bought that at auction, and it was £400,000. And what happens is, once you've bought it, you have a 20-day settlement period, so it all happens pretty quick. And within that period, I was able to get the keys and to go and check it out. I thought, well, I'll get around there, see if I can get a few local builders round or get a few local estate agents round, so I can start to understand what to do to this house to make sure it suits the local demographic. And I met a real estate agent who came round, and he told me how well I'd done on my purchase. And I knew I bought it for less than I expected to pay, and he said that he could sell it for more. And I was I said, well, at the end of the day, it's a money-making exercise. You can, once I get my keys, it's going to take me a month to line up my builder and to get my drawings done for my loft conversion, whatever's required. Take it for that length of time. If you can sell it, then you have a go. That's up to you. And the great thing in the UK is the real estate agent covers your marketing fees. So I had nothing to lose. I was like, I'm going to be in there working out what we're going to do with it. If you think you can sell it, then give it your best shot. Didn't matter to me. Anyway, after the day it settled, I gave him a set of keys, and within a week he'd sold it for £100,000 more than I bought it for. So which back then was probably about $160,000. And obviously I had to take that because it was such a phenomenal result. It's the easiest money to ever be made. But on the flip side, I was a little bit disappointed because it had taken away this opportunity for me to get my hands dirty and get stuck into a project. So consequently, I went and bought another property not far away in the suburb of Barnes in southwest London. And this was another terrace house, but this terrace house had been divided into two. So it had a ground floor apartment or unit, and then one on the first floor, and I bought the one on the first floor, and I knew that I could do a loft conversion to increase the size of it and modernize it. And I bought it, and I started to get the work done, and it was going to be beautiful. It was a lovely old house, and it was a great renovation. I got a good builder, and then it came time to sell that property, and it wouldn't sell. Well, it was just before I started to sell it, before it had even been finished, just to see what level of interest there was. And what happened is that and I fell foul of this, is that the property was on a lease. It's just a lease between the ground floor flat and the first floor flat, but it has a lease because it's a share of the freehold, which is the land that the property is built on. And I knew that, but I didn't think much about it. But what had happened is the lease, which was on there, only had like 25 years left to run. And in the UK, anyone who was looking to buy that, who was going to go to a bank to borrow money or to a lender to borrow money to buy that, the lender wouldn't lend money because if it's got less than 50 years left on the lease, they won't lend the money. See, and because I'd bought it cash, because I'd had all my money, we sold up in Sydney when we went back there, so I had enough cash to buy it. I hadn't foreseen that problem, and I hadn't asked myself why it hadn't sold before. I just thought I'd got myself a good deal. So that would be easy enough to sort out. But unfortunately, the lady who lived on the lower level was a very difficult to deal with. But ultimately, we had to do a new lease, which becomes a 999-year lease. And then that property can be a finance, or money can be borrowed against it to buy it.
Did that take long to get that? Because, I mean, I don't even know. I've never heard of a 999-year lease before. I know it happens commercially, because I know that big buildings and stuff like that, they usually lease the land from, you know, commercials and big businesses and so forth. That's quite common.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little bit like, I've got a development going on at the moment, and it's a little bit like this, a similar thing where you have two houses and they've got a shared driveway and it's on a strata. It's the same sort of principle as that, because you've got something which, you know, potentially the condition of one can impact the other, or the value of the other, or there's areas which are shared, like this house, obviously they sit on the same piece of land. And they also have like a shared front door and hallway. So it's just a case of managing that, for any future incident or issue that might appear. But that was a big learning curve.
How long did that process take to get that lease set up and then finally, you know, to be able to get refinancing?
Well, it probably took about three months to get that problem resolved. But the lady downstairs was quite a shrewd operator, and she would only re-enter into a new lease if she got an extra piece of land from the yard. So yeah, it was a big learning curve on that property. That's probably one of my worst investing moments, because what also compounded the problem with that property was then it was sold in a declining market, which was unfortunate. And then I was back in Australia then, and the solicitor who dealt with the sale, he took the money. I gave him some details. He was meant to put it into like a holding account, like an international holding account, but he didn't. He paid it into the account and he converted it into Australian dollars, which wasn't what he was supposed to do because the exchange rate was very volatile at the time and I had major problems. And then the bank reversed the transaction, but it devalued then, and then it was sat in a holding pattern. And I had to wait and decide, and it was probably one of the most stressful moments in my life, because every day I was losing or making money, and I lost a fair bit. But then I was just glad to be done with. But it's just two different, completely different experiences. One was like the easiest one in this 9 months. One was just the easiest opportunity, and the second was like the most challenging opportunity.
Hill explains his movements between the UK and Australia during that time, and how he managed a property from overseas.
Yeah, I was there for about 9 months, and then I was back, and that's when this sale was going through. So I was stuck over here. You've got the time zone challenge. You're dealing with banks who don't feel they really, really care, and everything you own is tied up in this transaction.
Yeah, that is a bit of a nightmare by the sounds of it. What was the reason for going back to the UK for that short period of time?
Yeah, well, we sold up a property here, and we went back just with a view to maybe living closer to my wife's family in Sweden. I don't want to be in Sweden, because I don't speak Swedish, and it's colder than England. So that's why we went there, because it's obviously much closer in the same time zone.
And then eventually you both decided to come back to Australia and then settle back down in Australia for the rest of your life.
Yeah, we just came to, I think what happened, my wife had come out here in 2001, we met here. But her family were always expecting her to return. And then after her children were born, they were a close family. And it was difficult to have that distance between them. But now everyone's worked out the way it is, and that's accepted. And we, unfortunately, due to COVID, we've not gone this year, but we go back as regular as we possibly can.
moving back to Australia and away from family support was challenging for Hill and his wife, but their vision for success was strong. Hill talks us through the strategies he used to build his portfolio after the return to Australia.
Yeah, so what's become apparent to me really was that, you know, the best way to create wealth through property or build equity is to buy properties in locations which are going to outperform the averages. So the location can do the heavy lifting. And the way I see it is you need to buy in an area where there's strong demand for people who want to live there, and also some scarcity of stock. So they're the two things. A lot of people look at the supply and demand and they get a little bit starry-eyed by the demand side of things. And statistically, you can illustrate an area has got massive growth happening in that area, or forecasted growth is very strong. But if there's no limitation in the stock or supply of property there, then obviously that demand can be satisfied quite easily. So the important thing is to have demand, but also scarcity. And probably the third major factor there is that demand for property ideally needs to be from people who have access to capital, who have high disposable income, because they're the ones who can go, I'm having it. And that's what obviously ultimately drives the house prices up or property prices up in a particular area. And that's where I could see that. That's where my first-hand experience of buying those properties in London, for example, they outperformed that four-bedroom house, which was further out of London. And that's because it's a more dynamic location. And that's why now, for me and for my clients that I work with, my focus is really to be in the middle ring of Sydney and Melbourne, in areas where aspirational professional people want to live, and there's limited amount of stock, so they have to compete for that. And certainly also in areas where they can't carve up land for more subdivisions or build more homes, and they can't build high rise in those areas either. And that means that there's going to be consistent demand. So that became that's a cornerstone of my investment strategy, is buying in the right location that's going to outperform the averages and holding it for a long period of time. I say, unfortunately, I didn't hold all of my properties for a long period of time, but I just rolled one into another, and ultimately ended up where I am today. So that's the one part of it. The other part of it is that, I've got a big focus on, what I now call or refer to as manufacturing equity. So it's having an asset in that right location, but also by having an asset where we can increase the value of that asset by doing something to it. So it could be as simple as a renovation, but my focus is probably more on developing it. It could be buying my choice is to buy older houses on bigger blocks, and that gives the option to perhaps put another house on the back of the block, or perhaps knock it down and put three or four townhouses.
Coming up after the break, we hear some more of Hill's strategy and tips to find the right areas to invest in.
The two drivers or what creates that access to capital are interest rates, which are as low as they can go, which is what's driven that last boom, which you've talked about, really.
We hear about his family renovation projects.
And he suffered bad advice and bad trades and all those different things that go wrong. And when your family's living in one room, it puts a lot of pressure on you to try and get it done.
What advice he would give to his past self if he got the chance?
I spent 30 years learning lessons, which, a lot of other people have had to learn exactly the same lessons. If I'd spent a little bit of money and learned those lessons from somebody else, I could have fast-tracked my own success.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hill and I are discussing the strategy he refers to as manufacturing equity, where he increases equity to gain extra cash flow in order to leapfrog into the next investment opportunity.
Yeah, I explain this to people. So, what drives house price growth is it's market sentiment and people's access to capital. If people have got more money, then they'll spend more money on buying homes. But the two drivers or what creates that access to capital are interest rates, which are as low as it can go, which is what's driven that last boom, which you've talked about, really. If people can access more money for the same salary, then they're going to spend more. And the other one is wages growth. And wages growth has been very slow in Australia for a long time. And when we come out of the, you know, hopefully for too long, we come out of COVID, yeah, there isn't going to be a lot of wages growth as unemployment grows, then wages growth is going to be non-existent or be minimal. So again, picking that location where the potential future buyers are people who are more likely to benefit from wages growth, again, is advantageous. It's going to support that growth. But what I say to people is, regardless, if we're going for a period of very little growth over the next 10 years, let's at least make sure you position your investment property in a location that when things get back to normal and there is more growth, then you're positioned to take advantage of it. But in the meantime, obviously, we've got that opportunity to manufacture equity. And as you alluded to then, what I like to do is, I'm quite simplistic, and I'm like, in people's working years, I'm not the type of clients I work with. We're not particularly looking for rental income. We're looking to build an asset base for the future. So I'm not talking to people who perhaps want to give up their day job. It's about people who enjoy their day job and they recognize that, that funds their lifestyle. But whilst they're going to work, operating behind them is this investment strategy, which is going to give them an asset base for the future. So when they choose to transition to retirement, they've got options, whether they hold on to them, they sell them, transition them to higher yield investments. Doesn't really matter. What you want to do is just about building that asset base. And my focus there is not on quantity, I'm much more like on quality, and the quality of the asset and obviously the proportion of equity you hold in it is the key.
Hill shares the details of how himself and his family ended up in their current residence after he became a stay-at-home dad.
So I worked for 25 years in IT telecommunications. And then when my children were born, when my son was born, I took time out of work, and I was tired of corporate by that point, and it was refreshing to have a step back. My wife is younger, and she was more excited and more ambitious about her career at that time. So it seemed like a great opportunity for her to go back to work following her maternity leave, and I'd become a stay-at-home kind of dad. And because I can't sit still and can't watch baby TV all day, I also started to do like cosmetic renovation. So my first house, we moved from Sydney, I moved to a property in Rose Bay. And whilst my kids were small, I would be renovating the property, and then I sold that property just prior to going back to the UK. I did a couple of the projects in the UK, and when we came back, I wanted to look for another property project. A lot of our friends friends had talked about the northern beaches being a great place to live. This is the northern beaches of Sydney. Prior to our trip back to Europe for 9 months, we'd been living in the eastern suburbs, which is a great part of Sydney. But I could see that what I heard from the northern beaches, that it was going to be a great place for kids. So when we returned, we rented a place in North Manly to see if we liked it, knowing that if it didn't work out, we could go back to what we knew. But as soon as we got here, it just felt like being on holiday. There's something about being close to the northern beaches, which has a just really relaxed feel. Felt a bit like going to Queensland or something to me. And we rented a place here, and I looked for a project, so I wanted something to do to get stuck into. And I bought a house in the suburb of North Kalkal, which was an older house, almost like a weatherboard type of cottage, which I could see there was the opportunity to completely renovate. Had some quite solid bones for it for a property of that era, but there was an opportunity to work on that. So we bought that house and we moved into it, and I did an extensive renovation on this property. And it's interesting because it's on two levels, and the lower level was like a little self-contained granny flat, and we spent, the four of us lived in there for 12 months, which you could never do with the kids the age they are now. But because the kids were little, they were like toddlers, it was all quite exciting and fun to have a bunk bed and a trundle and everyone squeezed in this little room. And I did this house as a development, as an owner builder, so I worked on it day in, day out. In fact, it was quite a challenge, because it was, if I'd known what I knew now, I would never have started it. It was a little bit like one of those grand design shows where everything seems to go wrong. he learned very, very, very quickly, and he suffered bad advice and bad trades and all those different things that go wrong. And when your family's living in one room, it puts a lot of pressure on you to try and get it done. And then we were able to move up into the new part of the house, and then I've renovated the lower part of the house. And the original idea was that that would be sold, and I would move on to my next project. But we love living here, so that was great. But obviously, that ties up a lot of capital. What happened then is I had a friend of mine who worked as a financial planning business, and at the time, and they'd asked me what I was going to do next, and would I be interested in helping their clients with property investment, on selling properties, and just helping and assisting them with their investment property portfolios. And that's what led me into working in what I do today.
We move on to discuss Hill's current development project and the strategy he's implementing this time around.
So I don't have a big portfolio project. So most of my properties which I've purchased have all rolled into this one property which I'm sitting in now, which is a beautiful house. And probably 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I bought a property which is not that far away in the suburb of Collaroy, and I bought a 1200 square meter block which had at the time had a development application approval. But it was actually a deferred DA approval, which is again something which I was quite naive and didn't understand fully at the time, which means it's a DA subject to certain conditions. But I bought it anyway, and 1200 square meter block with an approval for two dwellings on it. And the house had an old house on it, which had a tenant in it who's been there for many years, and it's been kept, and until this year it's been tenanted. And this really is a great illustration of the kind of strategy which I employ. Predominantly I buy in Melbourne because it's much lower cost of entry for my clients. But that property has gone up in value probably 500,000 or 600,000 without doing anything. Yeah. And now obviously I have the opportunity to manufacture the equity. So we're currently under construction and we're putting two dwellings onto that block. There'll be like two luxury homes, values at probably $2 million each. And ultimately there'll be a $4 million worth of property. It'll have $2.5 million worth of debt and $1.5 million worth of equity.
Equity, yeah, that's a very nice move.
And that's all done with borrowed money. So yeah, the return on the, I mean, there's, you're putting in 20% of the build costs, but predominantly it's done with borrowed money. So the return on capital is massive.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the kind of model. And obviously, again, you touched on this a little bit before, and this is what I love about the Melbourne sites, is we can buy a property for an investor. We can do the due diligence for development, and they can hold it for 4, 5, as many years as they like. But at the point where we decide to turn it from one older house into 3 or 4 townhouses, there's just a massive equity gain. They can make $500,000 on that. They'll make money on it because of the growth, because it will perform as well as anywhere else, or better than anywhere else. It'll outperform the averages for capital growth, whether or not there is any. But post-development, they've just got all those options, because then it goes to a strongly cash flow positive investment. But we know it's in an area which is going to be great and is always going to continue to grow. So the best thing, obviously, is to hold those properties, take advantage of the depreciation allowances, and set yourself up for your retirement. But again, if you want to go again, you've got options. If you've got 3 or 4 on separate titles, maybe you want to sell 2 or sell 1 or keep all 4. Just gives you lots and lots of options.
In his more recent investment years, Hill has adopted the attitude that a simple strategy is a successful one.
I really do think that. And it's been through 30 years of investing and learning. And it's great now because there's so much content available, which wasn't available when I started. But you put all that together, and there's so many different strategies, so many different things that people talk about. But when you boil it down, you can actually make it quite simple and straightforward. It doesn't have to be that complicated. People talk to me, is it risky or is it not? And it doesn't have to be high risk. If you stick to proven, tried and tested ways of investing, and stick to those fundamentals, it will work.
We find out what other advice he'll recommend to achieve the kind of success he has now.
I think the access to the data you get, I mean, people refer to it as RP data. I think the subscription I have is Price Finder, but also obviously Real Estate Common and Domain. You've got access to so much information about your suburbs, street properties, and that for me is invaluable. So I do very detailed feasibilities of properties to buy, to develop for my clients. And it's having access to all that information, which is not my own. You know, I can look at a house on the same street. I can see exactly how much it sold for. I can see exactly how much the offspring sold for or is rented for. You know, and I know my bill costs. I know my council fees. I know my consultancy fees. And I can use all that. But if I could only base that on my own experience, then it'd be very limited. But having access to that, you know, every property, you know, ones that I've looked at, which I haven't bought or have been unsuccessful, I just still trace them. You know, I'm buying in the same suburbs. And that data just is invaluable to see that. So I think you know, due diligence is key, and learning to, I mean, my thing is what I've tried to learn tonight is learning to look at properties and really ask yourself why you shouldn't buy them. It's very easy to say, yeah, I want to buy something, and it's very easy to get that, you know, this your cognitive biases that just your positive affirmations, yeah, it looks good. You start reading stuff and you start convincing yourself that something is great and this area is going to be brilliant. And you really have to do the completely opposite and go try and convince yourself why you shouldn't buy it. And that's where that data can provide a lot of information. And unfortunately, in Australia, it's just such an expensive mistake because of the stamp duty implications. Buying and selling costs, I say this to people all the time, you've got to get it right. And that's when people, it's great because the type of clients I deal with typically can see the value. But you know what you pay someone like me as a buyer's agent, it's just like the best money. It's the same, you know, people will spend that money when they sell that property to a real estate agent. It'll have an absolutely no impact on the success of that investment. They might have held it for 10 years, but the right advice at the outset, yeah, that's just the best money you can spend. It's the difference between $500,000 or $1 million in 10, 15 years.
With a wealth of knowledge behind him now, what would he say if he met his younger self 10 years ago?
I think I'd tell myself to, just don't worry, Giles, you've got this, you know. Because, the main things I've done in this period was obviously building this house and also, you know, going into business. And it's easy to get caught up or stressed or worried about things, but you know, I'm sorted now, so I don't need to let the little things worry me. I guess the other two things I probably learned, which would have been nice to have told myself, is to follow your gut, because if you know, your gut instinct is very, very powerful. And yeah, I've been in a business situation where I knew it wasn't, part of me knew it wasn't right, but I continued to proceed with it. And also to supporting that as well, you know, just documenting things. You know, I was involved in a business relationship which I didn't, you know, failed to document. Or, you know, I perhaps a little bit over trusting, a little bit over optimistic, and yeah, I sometimes neglect to focus on the detail. So that would be good advice to myself. I'm a bit excitable sometimes. There's another thing on that one that I think is really interesting. I wouldn't mind if I had the opportunity to say, talk to myself 30 years ago, which is probably would have made a bigger difference, would have been to seek the support of others. And I think, you know, I go back to, the way I was brought up, we didn't have any interaction with other people. My parents, they didn't, they never borrowed things from people. They never helped other people with other things. There was no sharing or support or creating a network. It makes you very independent. You know, it's like you can do anything yourself. And it created a very strong, DIY or do-it-yourself attitude or mindset, which on the one hand is really good because it gives you confidence to take things on. It gives you curiosity to understand things. So, I'm thankful of that. But what I lacked was the recognizing the benefit of, seeking a mentor to help me. I think, one of the biggest things I've learned, one of the biggest lessons I'll give to my kids is that you don't have to learn all the lessons yourself. You know, I spent 30 years learning lessons, which, a lot of other people have had to learn exactly the same lessons. You know, if I'd spent a little bit of money and learned those lessons from somebody else, I could have fast-tracked my own success. The other ones would be 30 years ago was you outsource stuff, Charles, which goes again with that DIY. You don't have to do it all yourself. Focus on what you're really good at and pay for good advice and good support in those other areas.
So how much of Hill's success is down to skill, hard work and intelligence? And how much of it is down to luck?
I think this is an element of skill. I think through experience and practice, you can become what you do. So I think skill is ongoing. And I think I've benefited from the skills that I've developed. Intelligence, I wouldn't pipe myself as being intelligent. I'm not academically gifted. I'm going to struggle with my kids' maths homework when he gets to high school. But the skills, definitely. The luck, I think there's a lot of luck. I feel very fortunate, obviously to be where I am today. And obviously I'm lucky that I was born in England as opposed to other parts of the world when that happened. I think there's a saying, I think it was Arnold Palmer, the golfer, which was like, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And I feel life's like that. So I think that perhaps it's not hard to work because you can just do the same thing religiously. But the more adventurous you are, more curious you are, the more you experience, the greater opportunity you have to be lucky. And then obviously you have to capitalize on that luck. So I'd say luck plays a fair part, but you have to make yourself be lucky by putting yourself in positions where that might happen.
Thank you to Giles Hill, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey and get a copy of this episode guide on the website, head over to propertyinvestory.com/guide. This guide will give you the inside scoop on the little gold nuggets of wisdom all our guests share from their backstories and their overall strategies and philosophies. Plus, you'll get a copy of the advice broken down and shared in a quick and easy to consume format.